Welcome to Beyond the Summit. This is Scalability's series of podcasts where we have some really interesting chats to some really interesting Northwest business leaders. If you want to hear more in the series, hit subscribe. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about what we do, visit us at scale-ability.co.uk.
Welcome to season two of Beyond the Summit, Scalability's podcast, with me, your host, Ruth Wilkinson. Welcome back to part two of our podcast with Nicola Combe of Morecambe Bay Wills and Estates.
In looking back on reflection, anything that you invested in or worse investment makes it sound pretty harsh, but is there something that you think probably that maybe wasn't quite right?
I don't think so. I think, you know, we invested in a really strong brand, and that's worked out really well for us. I think probably I've spent a lot of time saying yes instead of saying no. And examples of that are, you know, giving away a lot of free time. Mm. So, you know, maybe I should have been a bit more savvy in terms of, you know, this person is going to take like 4 hours of my time, and probably what they're paying for is an hour of my time. But actually, you know, you get to know whether that's what you need, whether that client needs 4 hours or whether they need half an hour. And so can I say that it was a bad investment time? No, I can't, because it was what that client needed at that time. I don't think there's anything really. I didn't have a great printer at the beginning, which used to drive me absolutely insane. So then the best investment was actually going out and renting a printer from the local printing company, who would just be there when it didn't work and give us all the ink we needed, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, a shout out to Infinity Print Solutions, who we use. So
really funny you say that. I often have talked about, and especially you'll know from a corporate background as well, and I used to run call centres. And I'm not sure how much time, monetary-wise, was ever lost over printers. Two or three people stood round, rattling trays around, kicking toner cartridges, and all of absolutely. But yeah, it's because somebody in the beginning thought they would make a choice to acquire a more economical printer that transpired to be anything but economical. Yeah. Nothing incites fury in me like a printer that just for no reason worked yesterday and doesn't work today. People that contact you that are proactive have established their own need. So they have a need for it, whether that have been before they were really ready, unfortunately and sadly, or that they're just very organised people that want to get it done. I'm going to take a punt and imagine that the very proactive, organised people that just want to get it done are possibly in the minority. So what were some of the things that surprised you, let's say with friends and family or maybe a wider network, that they just didn't understand about?
So I think, so the first thing I'll say is that still 60% of UK adults don't have a will. So you're right, you know, the minority of people actually have a will. But more shockingly, actually, only around 12 to 15% of UK adults have a power of attorney. So I think there was a lot of myths, you know, Dave down the pub or Fiona on Facebook or whatever said I should, you know, sign over my house to my kids because, you know, my neighbours did it and, you know, they'll never pay care fees. You know, so lots of myths. I don't need a will because I'm married. Or more worryingly, I don't need a will because I've lived with someone for however long and they are my common law partner, wife, whatever. So those were the really worrying things. But even more worrying was that I didn't know until Jim was ill. I had no idea what powers of attorney were. And I, like loads of other people, think they're for old people with dementia. And, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. And so I think what really surprised me was people's lack of knowledge. And I then felt it was sort of my responsibility to start to spread awareness. And so I offered to go into, you know, I used to stand up at networking meetings saying, do you know, you know, if you die and you give everything to your wife and that wife remarries, then her will be revoked. She won't have a will. And if she dies, everything goes to the new husband and your kids get nothing. And people were just like, what? Or I would say, you know, do you know that if you are incapacitated, you have an accident or a stroke or something, and you can't make decisions for yourself, and your husband goes to the bank and says, I'd like to take all the money out because my wife's in the hospital, they'll freeze your bank account unless you have a power of attorney. I had no idea. And, you know, and so I was trying to tell people. And I think that came as a surprise to a lot of people.
Why is it, do you think, when people go and go compare or whatever it may be, or the make-up market, whatever, and, you know, and they spend all day discussing electricity prices and the home insurance and, you know, they know how to do the car finance and all of those things, that then, you know, what happens if you're not there to manage them? Oh, yeah, all those things are contingent on having something that is like the overriding umbrella that allows somebody else, whoever's nominated in your life, to go, okay, hand that to me and I will organise. Is it just a blind spot people have got? Is it that actually it's just on the edge of their awareness, but they don't really want to think about it? Or is it there's just not any space in the plethora of other things that people are organising to dedicate the time to it, or fear? Which
I think it can be a mixture of all those things. So, you know, there was a recent survey that said, you know, what's the top reason that people don't do let's take a will? And actually the number one reason is apathy, or, you know, I've just not got round to it.
Mm.
And what people don't realise, you know, it's an hour of your life to have a conversation with someone who knows what they're talking about. You know, yeah, it can be an hour and a half, it can be 2 hours if you've got lots of questions. But an hour of your life, and Andrea, who works with me, often says, you know, couples spend more time choosing a sofa. And it's true. It's really, really true.
I laugh there. I shouldn't, because that sounds very insensitive. But she's hit the nail on the head, hasn't she? They do. People will argue and spend over what car they're going to get when they upgrade or whatever else it might be. Or, as you rightly say, take weeks to decide where they're going to go on holiday.
Yeah. And so, you know, for us, we just got, I think it's sometimes people don't know where to start. So our job is to make it easy. Mm. You know, so look, we'll give you, before we come and see you, you know, we'll answer all your questions when we come and see you. And I think actually the thing that really helps people is, although we offer appointments over video or in our offices in Lancaster, lots of people love the fact that we'll come round to the house. And it feels a bit more like a brew and a chat and a, you know, it's much, much, it's less formal. It's much more comfy. And, you know, so we make it easy for people and we just say, look, you know, find your time. It doesn't matter whether it's you've had your tea, you've put the kids to bed, or, you know, it's an afternoon, or it's, you know, a Sunday morning. You know, we'll talk for an hour. We'll just make it easy. So we try to remove the obstacles. And sometimes the obstacles are, I haven't got time. I just haven't got round to it. There is an element of fear. You know, and I do get people who say, or if I make, there's a taboo, it is a bit of a taboo subject to talk about, but actually people are a bit, superstitious, that's the word I'm looking for. If I make a will, I'm going to die. And I know it sounds really awful, but you are. I mean, that is the reality.
Yeah, at some point, yes.
At some point, but if you die without a will, then what you might want to happen may not happen, because the law decides. And, you know, we see examples all the time of people who have been cheated out of, you know, what their parents might have wanted them to have, or their partner might have wanted them to have, because they don't have a will and they don't understand the consequences. So for us, it's like, make it easy, don't make it frightening, make it comfortable, give the people as much information as they need or as little information as they need. And you get the broad spectrum of people who will keep you in the house for 2.5 hours asking every single question and dotting every I and crossing every T, to other people who will just say, oh, I know what I want to do. Well, why do you need to know that? You know, we do a really thorough job. You know, but they just want to make it a really, let's just get it done. And we do either, whichever suits the client at the time.
Okay. Moving on to a little bit more about you and some of the decisions you made or chose not to make. And you talked about it before, about this kind of making them affordable. And I know that there are lots of other price points out there, or rate cards, whatever you want to call them, that are more in the legal practices and professions. Have you had any kind of comment or feedback about that, or has it been accepted?
I think right at the very beginning, people were saying, and you know, I decided to do wills for £100 because I just thought, okay, that's something that may be affordable. And I need to say straight away, we no longer do wills for £100. We do wills for £195, which actually is still below the market, but actually properly represents the work that we do. I think I underestimated at the beginning how much work there was to do, and therefore we charge what we think reflects the amount of work that we do. However, we also know that for what you get for the work that Morecambe Bay Wills does, you get a heck of a lot more. We often talk about the value that we add. And so you can go and pay that or more with a lot of companies who won't do as much as we do. So, for example, you know, we do a full financial picture, we do a full family tree, and that allows us to understand how much effort people might need to put into something like inheritance tax planning, or how much they need to understand about who could actually inherit from their estate that they might not want to. So all of those things mean that we are doing everything we need to do to make sure that we explore the problem that you might have, if you want to call it a problem, we give you the right solution. However, you know, we don't have a lot of overheads, you know, fancy overheads like big offices with glass windows and walls and, you know, a massive big staff and a reception. You know, we have, you know, some part-time administration staff, and we have some relatively low cost offices. We do have an office now. It was started off, you know, me working in a spare room in my house. So I don't think we have been, I think a few people were sort of like, well, you'll get what you pay for. But then I look at it the other way, you know, and I say, well, actually there's a whole load of it, the other side of the spectrum of free wills. And there are a lot of charity wills where actually I see what little they actually give. And I'm not saying all charity wills or all free wills are a bad thing, but certainly a lot of them, and the ones that you do online, you know, they don't get anywhere near the same advice. So what I say is we're sort of like we are the middleman in the spectrum of things that are being done. You can either go and talk to a solicitor. And, you know, there are some great specialist solicitors out there, but solicitors are, in a lot of cases, are a little bit like a GP. Jack of all trades and a master of none. So, you know, they'll know a little bit about all areas of the law because they have to do that, you know, but they don't know everything there is to know about wills in particular and lasting powers of attorney. Same sort of thing with the GP. You know, they know a little bit about every illness, but, you know, if you need something, they'll refer you to what Maureen Lindman used to call an ologist. Always an ologist. So we see ourselves as the ologist, if that makes sense. But I think we give a really good value for money proposition. You know, and I don't think I've heard anybody. In fact, I get along a lot with a lot of local solicitors. I speak to them a lot. We refer work to them. There's some work that we can't do because it's an activity that we're not licensed to do or insured to do, and we don't want to do. So we pass work to them. And I think now they've realised that. I think the best thing was where a local solicitor said to me, and he was doing probate for someone who had done one of a will with us. And he actually said, that was a really well-written will. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Because that's what we want. You know, so I was quite pleased.
And when you first started Morecambe Bay Wills, and I'm going to use the term the will lady, because that's how the day you knew your marketing was working was someone referred to you as, oh yes, you're the will lady. But you were very much the figurehead of that. How have you transitioned between it being they don't actually need to speak to you all the time? You've now got other people who are very qualified, who have worked, I mean, how many years now? 4 or 5 years, and you know, have got plenty of expertise and experience. How do you deal with that?
I think it was, you know, the first person that I took on. So I always say to people, you know, if you've got a business and you're starting to grow and you start to go, oh, I'm going to need a bit of help, then, and lots of will writers actually come to me and ask, you know, I was a sole person, I'm thinking about, I need to build my business. So I'm actually now mentoring other will writers. And I say to them, the first thing I say is, get your book, your notebook, whatever you use, and at the back, have a page of things I shouldn't be doing. And as you are working, write those things down. So I started off doing that, and that meant I needed to have someone to do admin. Well, Paula was my sister. She did admin, and, you know, Paula was never going to be the forefront, you know, talking to clients. She would come out and do witnessing and stuff with me. But actually, that was the first thing about, you know, delegating. And then I actually realized that I needed someone to do the client facing stuff. And I had a conversation, which was this, you know, my face is plastered over everything, whether I like it or not. So how are people going to, you know, say, well, actually, it was Andrea who started with us. How are people going to take to Andrea, and how do we do it? And the advice that was given was, do it as, you know, you imparting knowledge to Andrea, you know, you working alongside Andrea, you coaching Andrea, and that would then give people the comfort that, you know, we were going to do things in the same way. And I think that's really helped. That advice really helped me, because it allowed me to sort of, you know, Andrea was now on our social media, for example. She was coming out and talking to businesses. She was networking. And then when Jane joined us, we did the same with Jane. And I think the other thing is that what you get from Morecambe Bay Wills is exactly the same no matter who you deal with. Yeah. And part of that is because, and I was just with our new will writer in North Wales this morning, going through, and she was like, oh my goodness, you know, all of the processes are written down. All of the templates that we use are all there for everybody. So we say the same thing over and over again, but we just tweak it to a customer. But no matter who you use, you know, or who you deal with in our company, you're going to get the same level of service. And it's drummed in all the time that this is what we give our customers. So I think that has really helped us, you know, not being fearful of putting someone else at the front. And then, you know, I still get the call that says, oh, you know, can I speak to Nicola? I go, yeah, yeah. But my friend recommended you, you know, so can I book in us? And I'll just say, look, you know, I haven't got any availability because I'm doing whatever. I haven't got any availability for the next 3 weeks or whatever it is. But Andrea or Jane, look after you. And, oh, well, I'd rather wait for you. And I go, well, you can. But actually, Andrea and Jane are just as nice as me. And I actually use that quite a lot. And they'll look after you just as well as I looked after your friend Susan. And I just reiterate that all the time. Mm. So same level of service and convincing them and then showing them that it's not just me out there doing this stuff.
But it's hard, isn't it, when a business ultimately has very much been delivered as yours.
Same, Ruth. You know, you will find the same. People will say, I only want you to do my campaigns or whatever it is. You know, you've got to convince people that you've built a team around you that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I implicitly trust the people that are around me, you know, and they come on appointments with me to begin with. Then I go on appointments with them. Then I check everything that they do. And, you know, you have to do it because at the end of the day, it's your reputation.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for the industry within which you work right now, going into 2024? What would that be?
I think there is the proliferation of do-it-yourself and online wills, particularly, where you are not given advice. And what we're seeing is that for people who did that in COVID, because they didn't think they could go and sit down with someone or whatever, or they did a video, you know, or they went online and just did something because they were worried, quite rightly. We're now seeing a huge rise, a doubling of what's called contentious claims. So in other words, somebody contesting a will. So and all of us in the industry are linking that to people doing it themselves and not really knowing what they do or what the safeguards are to make sure that it is correctly done. And so I think there's a direct correlation in that. So I think that that's something that's it's growing. And the, you know, the advance of free wills for a charity donation or free wills not even for a charity donation is possibly a little bit of a race to the bottom. So I think the biggest challenge is that wills can be seen a bit of a commodity. And I had someone the other day, you know, they rang up and they say, how much is it? And I'll say it's £195. Oh, well, I can get it done for through a charity for half that. And I said, okay, well, go off and do it and see what you get. Because I know you don't get the same level of care and attention, so but you get what you pay for. So I think that that, and then the obviously we've got to think about the younger people who are knowing they can do these things, but they actually want stuff done quickly. And I see this whole do you will in 15 minutes, and that caters to the need of people who just want to, I've got my phone in front of me and I want to just do this. And, you know, I don't want to have to sit down in front of someone. Can I not just tell you and you write it? But I think that that is going to lead to more and more and more and more challenges because it's non-advised.
So we could be storing up a problem here, couldn't we? There could be many of those. Everybody says it. Yeah. Let's just say the COVID wills, if we're going to give them a term.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've yet to realise how big that problem might become. Yeah. And then the person who might just want to do something on a text in 15 minutes, and that's, you know, their lifestyle, understandably, again, probably not going to rue the day that was a mistake until everybody finds out that's what's happened or after. So I suppose the other thing I'm taking from there is then actually a will might not be a one and done type of job. We should be revisiting something if the circumstances are changing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people do think it, because on your will, it says your last will and testament. And I often say to people, it might say that, but I can almost guarantee this isn't the last will you do.
Mm.
And actually, my circumstances with Jim, you know, he wanted to update his will and then it was too late.
Mm.
So we encourage people to look at their will every 3 to 5 years. But, you know, today I've been to a funeral of a client. I don't often do it, but I met a couple last year and they really touched me. She wasn't very well. She made a will and I'm not going to go into the details of what she wanted to do, but she made a will, as did he. And then he rang me not long after, a few weeks before Christmas, and he said she wants to change a will. So we managed to get it done. She was in hospital. She was severely ill and she passed away on the 30th of January. Now, I know that the will that she had, the last will that she made, which was the one that she changed, was the will she really wanted. But she had the foresight to say, actually, I made one, but I think I really should have done something else. And, you know, he will be forever grateful for the fact that we were able to do that and get the one that she wanted before she went.
Mm.
And that doesn't happen to everybody. So, you know, as your circumstances change, we prompt people. And I always say, look, this isn't a transaction. This is a relationship. This is the start of a relationship. So, you know, and that relationship continues because I was there today to support her partner at the funeral. I will be there to support him as he's in his role as an executor. You know, I've got clients who are going through, you know, struggles, family dynamics changing or whatever, and I will be there. Because I'll just pop round and I'll have a brew and I'll say, well, okay, you know, what does this change? You know, if you're going through this, then what does it change? You know, maybe a change in relationship. And you don't get that when you do your will online.
Yeah.
You don't.
No.
You know, you get the, oh, well, you know, if anything changes. But you don't get the, Nicola, can you come round and have a chat? Because I think I might need to do something.
Mm.
I think that's important.
Yeah, but that's the whole... I mean, that speaks to the ethos and the approach of Morecambe Bay Wills, doesn't it?
It does. It
now, we keep saying Morecambe Bay Wills. However, there are some additions to Morecambe Bay Wills.
When I first started this business, I wanted to call it Lancaster Wills, funnily enough, because I'm based in Lancaster. Hey, who knew? And somebody already had that name. So I was a bit miffed. So I decided to call it Morecambe Bay Wills. I wanted a geographical name because I wanted it to represent the whole of the area that we were servicing. Anyway, there was another company called Kendall Wills, so up in South Cumbria, and Lancaster was, and they both were owned by the same person. And about 6 months ago, Paul Rodman, who owned Kendall Wills and the trading name Lancaster Wills, all came to me and said, look, I'm thinking of retiring. I'd like somebody to look after my 1,500 customers. Would you be interested in purchasing the shares in the company? So we went through a number of conversations and that happened. That transaction happened on the 31st of January. So now Morecambe Bay Wills owns Kendall Wills and Lancaster Wills. I'm the sole director of all of those companies. And for the last 2 months, 3 months, I've been putting an awful lot of time into the, we had a slight rebrand of the two Kendall and Lancaster to bring them in line. But basically what we've done is we've just brought all of those customers into the Morecambe Bay Wills family.
But in terms of you, the owner, the, as you say, the sole director, ever a moment where you thought, what in the name of all things holy did I think this was a good idea for?
No. And I say that truthfully. The only time that it's really been difficult was because we also decided that if we were going to do this, we would need bigger offices. We're going to build the team. We intend to continue building the team. And so we moved office. So we were supposed to, the well-laid plan was that we would move office at the beginning of January and this would happen at the beginning of February. And then we would do some other stuff later on in the year after Easter. But unfortunately, the office move was delayed. So literally everything happened exactly at the same time. So that was the only time that it really was difficult. And I also at the same time, I lost my mother-in-law, who I'd been supporting and looking after in Edinburgh. So, that took a lot of personal time away for me and meant that, some of the plans that we had were a little bit behind. So has it been really busy? Absolutely. Have I been, running around like a headless chicken? Yes, I have. Do I regret it? Absolutely not. Because I still am there saying, we can do a really, really good job for our local community. And actually now, we've got an even bigger client base and more people to help. And I say it sounds really trite, but that's actually all we're doing is we're here to help people and get them to do things that they should do. Because I'll say over and over and over again, the kindest thing you can do for your loved ones is make a will or a power of attorney, because it makes it easy for them. They know what your wishes are and it gives them the authority to do the things that they need to do.
A couple of things before we finish off. What did school-aged Nicola envisage yourself doing at this point in life? So what were you going to go and do? Were you at an age where we had the whole career officers conversation?
Oh, we did. I went to the girls' grammar school in Lancaster and careers office was like, a big thing. You talked about 15 or 16. When I was 15 or 16, I was actually playing truant quite a lot. But anyway, that's a different story. I wanted to be a Latin teacher. And when I say this,
my goodness,
sort of go, what? And I think it was just because I really like languages. So I've learned Latin. Obviously, I've learned Latin. I've learned French, Spanish, Italian. I've learned Japanese. I've learned Russian. So I've learned lots of languages. And Latin is the root of a lot of those languages. So I wanted to be a Latin teacher. And funnily enough, I actually won a place at Oxford to go and study classics. And I ended up not going because my parents wouldn't have been. It was like the sort of thing I couldn't afford to do. My parents couldn't afford for me to go and do it. And in hindsight, I'm so glad, because as an academic, I don't think I would be good. I'm not a great teacher, or I don't think I am. But as an academic, I probably I don't think I would have had as much fun. So that's what I wanted to do. And then when I got into the sixth form at the Lancaster Girls Grammar School, I quickly realised that I didn't want to have a timetable that was like double French, double Latin, double Spanish, French. And then went off to college and did business studies with travel and tourism. And then I left and I got a job as a junior in a solicitor's office that paid me £2.50 an hour.
And damn then, good value you were too at that point.
I was. Apart from the very first day on my job as a junior in the office, in the solicitor's office, I shredded a pile of deeds. Because I didn't know what they were.
Oh, that's a mistake, isn't it? That you only make once.
Absolutely.
Because the fear that then strikes its way through you means that you'll never, ever make that mistake again.
Yeah, I now know what a pile of deeds look like.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you stay motivated?
I think I just like to be busy. I've always got my eye on the next thing. And people have to pull me back quite often. So, you know, I mentioned North Wales, and this year was going to be the year of North Wales, and then Kendall Wills, you know, presented an opportunity. So North Wales is not this year. You know, I'm bringing on someone to work in North Wales. I'm sitting here in North Wales at the moment, where I have a cottage, and I have lots of customers and too many customers, you know, just for me. So I've said 2025 is the year for North Wales, and 2024 we will have someone working here alongside me, you know, just continuing to build that. So things like that just sort of keep me busy. But I always say to people, I preach, but I don't practice what I preach, you know, have your business plan, have this, have that, do this, do that. And a lot of what's happened with me is just been gut reaction. Go on then. Let's have a go. And that's basically, that's how I'm doing at the moment. And I say this, I'm quite a risk taker. I haven't always been, but I'd say I'm impulsive. But I think I take more risks than the average person, because actually the worst thing that could ever happen to me, which is losing Jim, has already happened. And so I feel I have a very different outlook on, you know what, the worst thing that could happen is not as bad as the worst thing that's already happened. It makes it a little bit easier, I think.
It's a very poignant kind of comment, that because I think there were people listening to this where that makes absolute sense, because they can put themselves in that place, so they know what that feels like. It's an alien concept, I think, to people who haven't experienced it, and the sadness is you have to be able to understand what you just said, and I totally understand
and
it.
And I just think, you know, something really good, which is, you know, the work we've done, raise money for charity, blah, 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 blah.
Well, over 20-odd thousand pounds, haven't we, so far? So, you know, it's a lot of money.
So, you know, something really good can come out of something really bad, and that's how I look at it, you know. And so maybe that's what motivates me. I think what motivates me is just doing something that would make Jim proud. I mean, that is the real, and makes me proud, you know. So,
your best piece of advice to anyone who's thinking, could I do this for myself? You know, should I go and get a job?
I think if you are, it depends what's driving it. If it's a financial decision and you are going to take a big financial risk, my best piece of advice was, have a go at doing this part time. See if you can do both, so that you've got that financial stability, and see whether or not you can make a go of it. And if you can make a go of it, then eventually swap. Because for many people, you know, it's not easy to just step out of work, step out of your comfort zone, still pay all your bills. So I think, you know, keep the financial side stable, because what you really don't want is to take a big leap and then put yourself in a position where you're responsible for others. And I mean, I've not been in that position, so I'm lucky. But I would hate to see someone take a big leap and not understand the consequences. So be a little bit cautious is probably what I'm trying to say.
Nicola Combe, thank you very much for all your time and your insight. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.